We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts or on our YouTube channel, all over social media, or our morning newsletter, KCSN Daily, dedicated to your Kansas City Chiefs. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another edition of 21 Questions, the question and answer show for the Kansas City Sports Network. And all the questions come from our Discord channel. If you want to ask us a question and you are not on the Discord channel, first of all, you should be if you're a subscriber. If you're not, ping me on that. And if you're not a subscriber, now is the time. It is $30 a year. We are doing some of the best film breakdowns in
another fact, you
know, for the Chiefs. We have this Discord that's an awesome community that has literally everything that you could talk about. It's not just Chiefs, it's everything. And you get to participate in the My First Game campaign with the Boys and Girls Club of the Greater Kansas City area, sending two kids to Arrowhead for the very first time every single home game. Oh, and by the way, you have an opportunity to win two tickets of your own to every single game. It's a whole lot of stuff that happens for subscribing. With me today is my good pal, Maddie Lane. Maddie, my friend, I'm so glad to get to see you again since I've been missing you in previous weeks here. How are we doing on this fine evening?
It's been over a month since I've done a 21 questions. You guys kept taking them all before I could jump on them. So that was cool. So it's been a minute since I've been on one of these bad boys. And then, coming off vacation, things are good. It's always a little hectic getting back into the hang of things when you go on a 10-day vacation where you go to three different places that would all be vacations on their own. It was a long one. So I'm recovering, but I'm back. I'm here. I'm also watching the NBA draft as we record this. So if I'm ever sidetracked, if I'm ever looking off screen or get excited, it probably means the Charlotte Hornets drafted AJ Griffin out of Duke. That's what we're hoping for. Fingers crossed.
There you go.
Wait, hold on. I know it's been a minute since I've been on here. Do you not sing anymore? Are we done with the singing?
Yeah. We killed the singing.
Who's this we? Listen. I wasn't involved in this we.
Kent came in and did his version of what I do.
Hollywood.
And the man puts me to shame.
Also,
there's a little something coming. So we'll get into that in a couple more weeks here. And I did it for over a year. I figured it was time to put the damn thing to bed. So false. I don't sing anymore.
People disagree.
No, they don't. I promise you they don't. All right. Let's get to the questions. Again, these are all coming from Discord. So if you want to ask them, subscribe, get on the KCSN Discord. Mike Denny asks, with the knowledge that we now have, what is one free agency move that you would change retroactively, Maddie?
Can this go back to paying Joe Tooney left tackle money?
No.
And spending it on a defensive end?
This offseason.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Sorry. I don't know. I guess I wish the Chiefs would have got the Tyreek Hill stuff done quicker so that they could have went out and got a Von Miller or a Chandler Jones. I don't know if they really wanted to pay that much for those guys. That might have been a hard limit, whether they had the funds or not. But it seems just cloudy enough on the timeline that they may not have had the funds available when they would have needed them to land one of those two guys. So that's what I would change. Bringing in a veteran pass rusher like Chandler Jones, like Von Miller, that could come in and play opposite of Frank Clark and give the Chiefs kind of a three-headed pass rush off the edge rather than the one and a half, whatever they have now.
Wait. Who's the half?
They're both losing weight at an alarming rate. Actually, for Karlaftis, it's not alarming. It's like it's applauding. It's an applauding weight loss. So I guess yeah. I guess Frank is the half right now, and I don't let him know that. I'm afraid.
Okay. So let me ask you this question: if the Chiefs would have gotten the Tyreek Hill trade done early enough, how would you have been mad if they would have topped the Dolphins for Emmanuel Ogba? Remember, that's $16.35 million a year for Emmanuel Ogba. Would that make you feel a little bit better along with the Karlaftis move?
Ooh, I don't think so. Okay. I don't know if I think Ogba's worth that much money. I think that was one of those that I was surprised he got that much. So I don't think so. I think that's about where I would have drawn the line. I don't think that he's on that same level as a Chandler Jones, and they're making roughly the same per year. I get he's younger. He's a little bit more of a long-term option, but I just don't know if he's that level. So for the Dolphins, they're paying that much money for a guy that I think is at best a secondary pass rusher. He might even be more of a tertiary pass rusher. That's a hard pill to swallow. So I think if they went that route, I don't know if it would even be, it might be worse.
Okay. Okay. I was trying to think of the other younger pass rushers that got deals, and Ogba is the one that jumped to mind there. So, I mean, it is what it is here. All right, Mike in Sweden, what is your most unexpected cut on the 53-man roster? This one's a tough one. I'm going to go with one of the fairly established offensive linemen that Andy Reid has kept through several different iterations of this offensive line. I think Darian Kennard is going to make the roster. I think Lucas Niang is going to be the swing tackle at the very least. I think Andrew Wiley is going to stick around. But you could convince me that Nick Allegretti, a player that has been very valuable to this team, don't get me wrong, is a little bit on the outside looking in with all the depth that they've built up, and the positional value that they're seeing and some of this other stuff. So I think it's going to be one of those offensive linemen that's filled in a lot and played a lot of snaps for the past couple of years that's just going to see himself on the other side of the cut line.
Do they have another backup? Am I blanking? They brought Austin Ryder back, correct?
They did. Okay.
So there's your said. That's who I was missing. That's a good one.
But then they cut Austin Ryder once this offseason already, and then brought him back. So like I don't think that it's necessarily going to be Austin Ryder.
Okay, here's a little bit of a surprise one, Noah Gray, because I think we're all kind of falling in love with this Chiefs wide receiver room, and we don't know how that's going to shake out. So will the Chiefs maybe keep the top end of their receiver allotment? Will they keep a full-on six wide receivers this year? And if they keep a full-on six wide receivers, are they going to keep four running backs? Are they going to keep four tight ends? Are they going to keep four of both? Noah Gray, what he does, I think you can make the easiest thing to say, Jody Fortson, Juju Smith-Schuster, MVS, and others can accomplish essentially what he's doing, more so than you probably can say the same thing about a Jerick McKinnon, or maybe it's a Justin Watson at this point in time, just for special teams value. Whatever it may be, I think Noah Gray's, what he brings might be the most replaceable out of every player on all three offensive skill positions.
You are going to make our buddy Nate Tice very sad.
Love Noah Gray too, but I would say Jody Fortson, but last year Jody Fortson showed more than
Noah Gray. I think Jody Fortson's about as close to a lock as you can get, right, in that tight end room.
like, if they feel good about his health and his development, like, I think you could almost be comfortable with those three, knowing that you have some bigger, more physical receivers in MVS and Juju that can accomplish a lot of the same second level blocking stuff to the same level as Noah Gray.
Man, that would be interesting. Boy, how much crap does Brett Veach catch for that one? Even though it's a day three guy, like, I think there was just a lot of hype around that one. Joe Penfield asks, our Royals guy here asked, not a question, but I need one observation about the Royals from each of you. Maddie, you start, since you're apparently the king of this.
I haven't watched a single pitch of baseball since I was last in Kansas City for the NFL draft, and I gave my Royals takes. One observation about the Royals. People are very mad that they are bad and that they don't seem to understand that they're bad. I don't know. I see a lot of hate for their not coach. What do they call it in baseball? Manager, I guess. Their manager. There's a lot of disdain for whoever the Royals manager is, not like coming up front and saying, hey, we know we're bad. Here's all of our young guys. Let's play them. People seem upset with how he's handling their badness.
Yeah, I see a little bit of that on Twitter as well. I have to give a take from the last time that I genuinely watched baseball with any regularity. Bo Jackson's really good at this, you guys. I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. He does some spectacular stuff on the field. So that's my Royals assessment right there. Isaac Hugh, if you could add Mahomes to any Chiefs team since 2002, that's the past 20 years, which team is most likely to win the Super Bowl with that addition alone? I love that question, and I know what mine is. Maddie, do you know what yours is? Because I can go first here.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Mahomes on essentially any of those Alex Smith-led teams is probably a very dangerous option. I'm trying to think back of when the Chiefs... I take that back. I don't remember the exact year because I'm bad about this stuff, but our year that the Chiefs had great offense, went into the playoffs and lost to Indianapolis Colts in the playoff game there against like the worst rushing defense, put Mahomes on that team. I understand the quarterback play wasn't abysmal necessarily for the Chiefs then, but it could have been that much better. And you're going to take what was the league's, I think, best offense that year, one of the best offenses that year, and make them absolutely the best. So, like, I think that would have been fun. And you get to transport him into that era of football that has no idea how to deal with player of his, like, just gifts. I think that would be fun to watch.
Mine is pretty easy. It's 2015. I know Bob Sutton gets a lot of hate, but that defense was number three in points allowed in 2015. Went into the playoffs. They skunked the Houston Texans in the first round and then lost 20-27 against the Patriots in the second round there. Give me Mahomes on that team. You know, it's not like the weapons were like elite or anything like that. It was, Chasen Avant, Albert Wilson, Chris Conley, and yeah, there was Macklin and Kelsey were part of it, but
there was enough there.
There was enough there to where you could put Mahomes on that team with the best defense of Bob Sutton era. And I think you could get somewhere with that team. I think you got a shot at winning the Super Bowl there. All right. We've got the Abe Froman. What wide receiver do you think has the best chance of not making the 53? Or as he frames it, who is going to lose their job to Marcus Kemp?
I mean, it's Justin Ross based purely on a special teams factor, I guess, right? Like, we've talked about this all offseason. How many wide receivers can you have that won't play special teams? And you already got McCole Hardman's not doing anything on special teams but being a returner. MVS hasn't played special teams since he was a rookie, I believe. Juju Smith-Schuster, same thing. So there's three guys that aren't playing special teams. Sky Moore, maybe you get him to play some special teams, but that's a second round pick. I don't know how much you're going to be forcing him to play a lot of it. And then now all of a sudden, like, now you're into the guys have to play special teams to make this roster. And you're looking at Josh Gordon, Corey Coleman, Justin Ross, like that whole trio of guys probably isn't playing a lot of special teams. Kemp's going to need a spot. This is where I think Justin Watson maybe gets a spot. Darius Fountain comes in because he's played special teams. Like, you're going to need your wide receiver 5 and 6. If you keep 6 to be special teams players, that's where I think it's got to be.
Yeah, and Keith McLean actually asked that question: does Justin Ross make the 53? So there you go. That's the avenue for him not making the 53. I will argue this: I think that Josh Gordon or Justin Ross is going to make this team. I think that they're going to keep one of those bigger guys, and so I do think that they'll probably bet on Justin Ross being there. So I'll go Josh Gordon, but it's for the exact same reasons. Guy that's not going to play a ton of special teams, a guy that's not going to contribute in all of those phases. You are just getting him on the field because of his size, his ability to go up and get the ball, win in contested catch situations, things like that. Although Justin Ross obviously has huge upside if he can be healthy. So I think that they're going to gamble and keep him in that scenario. But same sort of reason, you know, it's not special teams. So the other guy is going to be gone.
Right. And I agree with you. Yeah, like I would say, I think they do keep one of them. If I were to guess, it's just, if I had to pick a specific guy that was going to lose his job to Kemp, I'm going to take a non-special teamer. So I would say the big guy. Maybe they awkwardly feel comfortable with only one wide receiver who's a special teams, like a full-time special teams player, and then it becomes Kemp or Watson. Doesn't seem very Toby, but like that's the only other option, I think.
Man, yeah, it doesn't. But I mean, we talked about that a little bit. They're going to have to lean on that secondary heavy if they don't have any wide receivers going there. And I mean, they got a lot of guys that could. You can keep a lot of young guys and play special teams over there in the secondary. And, you know, we saw them bring back Chris LeMans. So, you know, we'll see what happens there with special teams. All right, Andy Nagel. Mahomes has grown each season. Last year, it was his willingness to take the check down or the smaller play. What do you see as the growth that he makes this season? This is a good one because I feel like he's continually improved in a lot of stuff. I do agree that he took the shorter stuff a lot better last year and he kind of adjusted that. I think we're going to continue to see him improve his pocket presence. You saw it grow immensely last year as well, trying, you know, making a concerted effort not to drop too deep with the kind of tackles that they had and the way that Andy Heck likes those guys to play. So I think that you're going to see him feel a little more comfortable in the pocket, going to feel a little more comfortable stepping up and through like he has. And then, you know, maybe take advantage of the fact that they've spent all these assets on offensive line. They've got a good group of guys. Trust them a little more to be able to stay put for a little while longer, read the field. And then if you got to bail then. But, you know, don't just start, you know, seeing ghosts out there and running out of clean pockets.
I guess I don't know if it's growth or just, and I think you guys talked about this a lot with Nate Tice earlier this week, getting to see Patrick Mahomes throw the ball towards the sideline a little bit more and just watch him develop there. Like, I think there's a little bit of a split is, do the Chiefs not throw the ball over there that much because it's not as efficient for the system, and thus you just don't see it happen often, and then you include the player type and it's just not a good play for the Chiefs? Or is it something that Mahomes maybe isn't great at? And I don't think that there's a physical limitation, but he also, going back to Texas Tech, has never been a guy to throw a lot of rail shots, as Kent likes to call them, down the sideline. That's just never been, not a lot of back shoulders, not a lot of these honey hole shots that Gruden likes to talk about. Like, that's not been his game. I'm not saying he's bad at it, but maybe that is an area where he does not throw to as accurately as before. So seeing his growth throwing to these bigger receivers, some of these guys that may actually operate a little bit better in those scenarios and in those spots, on top of having an off season to adjust the offense to attack those areas, because that's where teams were trying to force them. I would love to see him come out and all of a sudden look like a above average, you know, player or quarterback throwing out there. Because right now, the few that we have, I'd say he's probably been about average at best throwing under those. And like, you compare that to Aaron Rodgers is the best, but some of the back shoulder throws that Aaron Rodgers makes on the sideline are absurd. Like,
The placement is ludicrous on Rodgers' back throws. Back
absurd.
Shoulder throws. Yeah.
And like, just getting Mahomes even partway there, because you know he has the physical gifts, would go so far. And now he has the weapons to do it. And if the Chiefs can incorporate that and then let him showcase the ability to do it, I think that would actually be pretty substantial growth, because I think it's one small area of his game that we don't talk about enough, of a potential weakness of being a guy throwing outside the numbers, not just deep downfield.
Right. And it makes me wonder if it's just one of those things. You don't have the reps, so you're not working on it, because you're not going to throw a back shoulder to DeMarcus Robinson, Tyreek Hill, Mecole Hardman. That's just not their skill set. Like, it doesn't make sense to be doing that sort of stuff to those types of guys. Now all of a sudden you've equipped your wide receiver room with an arsenal of guys that could do that. So maybe you just see that. Maybe just the reps will be there. So Drew Clark, what's your go-to stadium food order? I don't know the last time I ate food in a stadium, Maddie. I think all the times that I've been to a stadium with you. Oh, well, I take that back. We ate at the Golden Knights game, didn't we?
Did we?
Did we? Yeah, I know. Yeah,
Tucker and I don't remember. No, we did. They had the there was the burritos, correct?
Yeah, yeah, those are pretty good. Yeah,
yeah. So my go-to order's a burrito.
I guess so. I mean, yeah, most of the times it's beer. Like that's my food order is beer. But like, I don't typically, like, when I go to Arrowhead, I make sure to load up outside because the food that I'm getting in the parking lot is infinitely better than anything inside Arrowhead. That's not dunking on Arrowhead's food choices. It's more praising the fine people of Kansas City who know how to tailgate. So
I will say, you know, some new stadiums, they're getting some like real restaurant type things. Like the I'm not saying it was a gourmet burrito, but we went to the Golden Knights game and it was a good little fine, overpriced, but fine little meal to have that tasted, you know, good. So like, you get some of these newer stadiums, they are trying to incorporate higher end food choices and then charging you $24 for like 450 calories.
All right, Maddie, this one's specifically for you. This is from our good buddy Bearcat.
Oh, no.
Matthew, if you could only pick one of short shorts or tank tops to wear for the rest of your life and the other you could never wear again, which would you choose? Also, no mattering the answer, no cutoffs, whether that be jeans or shirts, will be allowed either.
I'm offended that you would ask me this, Bear, and I'm especially offended that you would tell me that I was going to Maddie answer this. But I'm also going to Maddie answer it. I'm taking the short shorts because they're the most comfortable thing. And most places, not all, like, I'll wear a tank top if I'm going out to a grocery store or whatever. I have no problem with that in the summer. But I can live with doing a t-shirt for that. Most of the time that I'm wearing a tank top or a cutoff shirt, I can just be shirtless. Like, I could just go shirtless. I can't go society doesn't let me go pantsless yet. Like, we're not there. We're getting close, I think. Yet. But we're not there yet. So, like, I take the short shorts. The 95% of the time that I would have a tank top on, I'm going to be, you know, around my house or at, like, a pool or somewhere where it's acceptable just to be shirtless anyway. So, like, I'll have to live there. I'll be upset. I will dislike you. Ooh, I can continue to wear, like, the short sleeve button-ups and just have it completely unbuttoned, too. Did a lot of that on the cruise. So, like, I can just have the full...
Look at you, finding all the loopholes. This is...
Full open button up, so...
I missed all the loopholes that you bring to not just 21 questions, but games and our podcasts in general.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, Mike Denny asks, are there any differences in play call / coverage concepts in nickel when you have three safeties versus three cornerbacks? And I assume he's not talking about, like, you know, you're just like kicking a safety down into a slot or something like that, because largely, no. That's why, like, if you follow some of the stuff that I'm writing right now, I use the term apex defender a lot, because that's what coaches use a lot, because that apex defender could be anything. It could be a slot, it could be a safety, could be, you know, linebacker, anything like that. So they try and keep things generic, so you're still running a lot of the same coverages regardless of your personnel. So let's go under the assumption that we're talking about a traditional nickel versus using some of these three safety sets that we've started to see in the, you know, in the college ranks, NFL lately, Maddie. What you think?
I'm trying to think about it, right? Because I don't know if there is going to be significant, if you are going with a true three safety look, if you are going with a true, like if you're playing three safieties like, for the same thing, I don't
like
know
a Matt Campbell, Iowa State three safety sort of thing like
okay,
that.
Yeah. Now, if that's the route we're going, I think that changes a little bit else too. Cause that's not, unless you're no longer nickel most of the time, unless you're going, it's getting a little confusing, okay. Right? All right. Okay. So
yeah,
if you just have three safeties, I'm assuming you're still just a nickel. So we're talking, I mean, five defensive backs here. So just three of them happen to be safeties. Any team that does that is going to, their third safety is going to be a slot capable defender. It's going to be
correct.
Tyrann Mathieu circa 2019, regardless. And then your coverage calls don't change at all because you're just going to have him play that exact same role. You can maybe add a few more invert type looks, especially utilizing the slot. Steve Spagnuolo has gotten great at doing that. And I think it is no coincidence that Tyrann Mathieu, Kendall Fuller, L'Jarius Sneed, all these guys have played a lot of slot, played some safety at some point in time as well, because like they can do a lot of these things. So I don't know if there's a huge difference just besides maybe getting to add a few more of these slot invert type of stuff. If you want to go into like the dime and then start talking about a true three safety defense versus a traditional dime defense, then things I do start to change a little bit, because now you play cover three, or you're going to play some variation of quarter half, and you are going to have a lot more over the top help from the pre-snap position, and everybody gets to play top down. So then things change. But in terms of the nickel, I don't think much does.
I mean, I think people like look at, I know a lot of like our buddies at The Athletic that we've heard talk about, you know, all these defenses and scheme shifts and stuff like that. Like they look at the Chargers and the addition of JT Woods there. And the thing that like jumps out to guys like Deontay Lee is, man, they're going to play a safety in the box all the time. Derwin James is going to be your box guy, and he's going to be a little bit, you know, capable of flexing to the slot if you need him to, or he can play kind of more in the middle of the park, knowing that he can fit against the run and things like that. It does change some of the behaviors that you can do there for certain in those sorts of things. And so like, let's relate it to the Chiefs here. If you've got Juan Thornhill and Justin Reed that can both play, you know, in deep halves, can both kick down into the slot, and then you've got a guy like Brian Cook who reads well from deep but also can play up there in the slot, play in the box a little more as a bigger guy, now all of a sudden it allows you the flexibility maybe to play more quarters, maybe to play more, you know, and have those guys aggressively fill, match the number two from deep, or, you know, work with the safeties or work with the corners on some of that stuff as well. So I could see that the coverage calls could shift a little bit in those instances. But like Maddie's saying, that might just be out of dime that we start seeing a little bit more of that, you know, or, you know, certain teams that you're going to see, you know, maybe you get to play your nickel a little bit lighter than you would with playing, you know, a guy like Nick Bolton and Willie Gay on the field, because Steve Spagnuolo is always going to want to aggressively fit the run as well as he can. So, yeah. Leitone 44, if the Chiefs theoretically had the number one pick in next year's draft, what type of trade offer would the Chiefs have to get to trade out and not draft Will Anderson? I don't think that there is one for me, Maddie. I genuinely don't think that there's anything that could be offered to me that would get me to not select Will Anderson. I think he's that special of a player.
I want young Nick Bosa plus the 49ers first round pick and their first round pick in 2024. So like they can, 2025. I'll let them keep their next one, but then they got to give me the one after that. So I'm getting two first round picks and Nick Bosa. I don't care if I have to pay him because he's really darn good. But that's offer number one I'm accepting. Trade offer two, Kayvon Thibodeau and the Giants' next two first round picks. I would also accept that as compensation to not draft Will Anderson. So that's it. That's all. That's where I draw the line, though.
That's all of it. Like, we spend a lot of time, like, every single year, people are like, oh, yeah, this defensive end, he's the next Myles Garrett, he's the next dude, you know, and all that. And a lot of times, he's not. Like, especially like last year when we talked about all these guys, like Trayvon Walker's not that guy. Kayvon's not that guy. They're good players, don't get me wrong, but they're not that guy. Will Anderson is that dude. Like, I mean, last year for Alabama in that rotation, beating all these other guys to the punch, playing against good SEC teams, had 17 and a half sacks and 31 tackles for loss. I don't like those are the sort of gaudy stats that you see somebody in Conference USA put up and everybody's like, ooh, I don't know. He might be a really good player. This dude is playing for Bama in the SEC, putting up those kind of numbers as a sophomore, like ludicrous talent. I don't know that I'd accept either one of your trades, Maddie. I think I'm staying put.
Okay. I'm taking the Nick Bosa one for sure.
Yeah, okay. The Nick Bosa one would give me plenty of pause. Like I would genuinely think about that one for a little while, but the Giants can keep Thibodeau. I'm taking Will Anderson. Steve Gray, between Snead and McDuffie, who should play in the slot and sub packages? They each bring different strengths to that spot, so I'm curious where you stand on it. Seems like Spags doesn't normally do this, but would there be any advantage to rotating them based on matchups? For instance, he says McDuffie versus Renfrow or Snead versus power slots or versus run heavy teams. I like the thought. I do. I mean, I think we're starting to see shifts in defensive philosophies, certainly out of the slot. Like we don't see as many small slot players anymore. And we don't see as many small slot receivers anymore. Everybody's going big. Everybody's trying to push for bigger, you know, more physical dudes from that slot position, the Chiefs included. So, yeah, if you wanted to tell me that L'Jarius Sneed should be in there because he's built to handle those kinds of guys and built to fit the run against those types of teams, absolutely. I'm on board with it. And then, yeah, against the Raiders when Renfrow's in there, sure, put Trent McDuffie on him. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah, I'd be all for that. Switch him up around, move him around a little bit. I'm torn on this because I think L'Jarius Sneed profile, we've all kind of said from the beginning, fits better on the outside. That's where he theoretically should be better. And then now you get Trent McDuffie, who theoretically his profile should fit better as the slot.
Yeah.
The thing though is L'Jarius Sneed has been so impactful from the slot with his blitzing and with some of his plays versus the run and how he seems to understand what they're having him do. I don't know if removing him from that situation to play him at outside corner allows him to be as impactful as he has been so far through his first 2 years. And I think that's a big part of it. I think to do that, you would immediately come in and not saying not only is Trent McDuffie going to cover as well as Snead, which I think he would from the slot, but he's going to make the same level of plays versus the run and as a blitzer. And that's kind of where my worry starts to come in. And not that McDuffie's bad in either one of those things.
Right.
He's just smaller. He just simply is smaller. So will he be as good as Steve, who's been great in some of those areas? That's where my concern would come in. And like to Craig's point though, if they got comfortable with both of them playing inside and outside and they just wanted to go hunt matchups between though, even just those two, not even whoever's going to play across from them, that's fine with me. Heck, you would have just played matches with this entire team, but I just need to put Lonnie Johnson on whoever the X is and just have him throw hands, and then I can have Trent McDuffie take whoever the quickest receiver is, and then L'Jarius Sneed is taking, you know, the best deep threat or, you know, combo guy with the size of your typical Z receiver. Let's have at it. Like, let's do that all day. I don't know if Steve Spagnuolo has done that much though. That's just something that a lot of defensive coordinators don't do unless you have Jalen Ramsey, who is capable of essentially locking down anybody at any given time.
Ramsey's a unicorn though. He's a unicorn. This brings me back. I'm going to ask you this question because I got asked it last week in 21 questions. You weren't here for it. OKR asked us last week, Matt and Craig seem to have more faith in Trent McDuffie than they do in Spags' ability to use him. Gentlemen, am I getting an incorrect vibe? I said, no, I do think that Spags is going to be able to use him. It's the size element is kind of the thing. I didn't want to put words in your mouth there. Do you have anything additionally kind of that's obviously my abridged version of that, but you know, do you have anything additionally to that? Are you worried about Spags's usage of him?
No, I don't think I'm worried about it. I just, I guess the holdup is how much will be changed for him specifically. And if that's the case, was that the, if they have to change everything for one player, and it's not everything, it would just be a lot of the coverage concepts to one side of the field. But if they have to change that much, is it really, was it really worth it to make that trade up and that pick? At that point in time, you're starting to straddle the line of, okay, maybe this fit was just so far out of the norm that you shouldn't have done it. Now, I don't think it'll be that bad, but Steve Spagnuolo does have to do it. Like, he has to adjust some things. He has to not ask Trent McDuffie to play like Tre'Davious Ward. If he goes out there and asks him to play like Tre'Davious Ward, it's not going to work that well. Do I think he'll do that? No, but you kind of have to see it first before you're willing to say, okay, he's not going to be pressing 63% of the time or whatever the Chiefs did last year.
All right, Casey from KC asks, do you think the Chiefs make an impact trade before the season starts? I don't. I really don't. I think that any opportunity to do so would have happened already, especially if it's like a major move. Now, again, this is knock on wood, barring a major injury that occurs in preseason or something like that. But I don't. I think that they're either done or they're going to wait for cutdowns or, you know, like a minor trade. He's put major clearly in here because he knows, you know, they may trade an offensive line or a running back or something like that. You know, we've seen those minor moves from Beach, but nah, I don't think that they're going to make another major trade before we get to the start of the season.
Yeah, big Bob Quinn, come on down. It's happening. Oh. Speak it into the universe.
Hey, listen, I will gladly eat my words there. Gladly eat my words if that means that he's going to show up here. Gooby 35, how, if at all, do you think this offseason would have looked different if the Chiefs didn't collapse in the AFC Championship game, Maddie?
Yeah, it would look, I think it would be a lot different, actually. I think you would still have, okay, let's walk this back. I don't know if the Chiefs would beat the Rams in the Super Bowl if they did not collapse against the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know if the Chiefs were, I don't know if I'm willing to say the Chiefs were playing at the level that the Rams were at that point in time. Could they? Absolutely. I just don't know. I don't feel like the last time when the Chiefs lost to the Patriots going into the Super Bowl where I was like, oh no, the Chiefs were going to smoke the Rams if they played that Super Bowl. Don't feel that way at all this time. Like, right? Right. I think the Rams looked a little bit better down the stretch. So maybe things still wouldn't have changed. Maybe that choke job still would have happened. Maybe the same difficulty still would have happened in the Super Bowl. However, there's a chance it didn't, and Tyreek Hill may not be wanting to get out and go find his own voice somewhere else. You might not have all the same amount of veterans out the door because clearly somebody or something rallied together to make this work. Would Mike Kafka be gone, which means would Matt Nagy be back? Like, just there's a lot of dominoes that could have fallen because of what happened. And it doesn't matter how hard the entire regular season is and your first couple playoff games are. If you guys all come together to win the Super Bowl, brushes a lot of that under the rug. I've said it before, I think, on one of these podcasts, and I'll say it again. The Seattle Seahawks won a Super Bowl where like 75% of the team would not talk to Golden Tate. They literally would not talk to him because they hated him. And they won a Super Bowl. Now, he did end up getting jettisoned out, but like there's a lot of inter-team stuff that can go away if you win a Super Bowl. So if they went and won a Super Bowl, they might have been running it back for another year. They really might have been with obvious changes, but like they might have kept a lot of the same core together.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. Tyrann Mathieu's probably still here because that means that, you know, the defense played well enough, and especially if they win the Super Bowl. Holy crap. Yeah, like you're going to jettison a guy that came in and then in 3 years won the team two Super Bowls and took them to another one, like on and was the leader of the defense. That's a guy that you're probably keeping. Like, you know, there's it would be a difficult PR move, and I could see them sticking with some more players. Now, I like the moves that they did this offseason. I like the way that they've built it by and large. I mean, defensive end is still a question mark, but they had so many holes. There was going to be something that we were going to be a little bit iffy on. And I think that it's potentially trending the right way there. But I do think that we would have seen more established veterans stick around because, again, you make three Super Bowls in 3 years. Like, you're the kings of the AFC. You're on top. Why shake it up any more than you have to? Obviously, you let dudes go when the contracts are huge and things like that, and you restructure the guys that you need to, but you're going to largely keep the same core because it's working, because something is working for you. So the fact that they didn't means that they kind of did a little mini reset here. So it's an interesting thought that, you know, one half of football may have changed it pretty drastically there. No Chicken Tonight asks, any interest in Ndamukong Suh? I'd kind of rather him be on our team than him trying to maim our quarterback in another Super Bowl.
No, I'd have no problem bringing in Suh at this point in time. Well, wait, did he? I thought he may have signed. Did he not sign?
No, he just teased the Las Vegas looks kind of good to him.
Ah, okay. So, I would not mind it. I think he still can play a little bit, but I've stated it before. I don't need to spend any significant money on it. I'd rather roll money over than pay another defensive tackle, because you don't build a defensive line through your defensive tackles unless you run a 3-4 with Brandon Staley's, you know, two gap system. And then even still, you have Joey Bosa and you trade for Khalil Mack anyway. But like,
right.
You just don't do it. I don't think you spend any significant money to do that. So like, I'm not against it, but like, I have no need to go chase him down either.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. If he's here, I'm going to be excited about it, but it's probably also going to be cheap enough to where, like, I'm not going to be upset about any sort of signing like that. And yeah, I'm fine with him being in the rotation. He'd be an upgrade for certain. Mike Denny, at the end of the season, the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. We're looking back, and it's because one guy had the best year of his career. Who is that guy? It's Justin Reed. For me, it's Justin Reed, because if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, I have a feeling there's going to be a significant contribution from the defense. I think we're going to see a general shift. Yes, physicality, the way that they tackle, the way that they play, the tenacity and everything like that. But that secondary is going to be so young. It's going to be incredibly young this offseason. And it appears that Justin Reed and Juan Thornhill are the guys that are leading it. And Justin Reed, we've seen on an arc, he's been a very good safety in the NFL so far this season. If they win a Super Bowl, that means the defense played well. That means the secondary played well enough. Justin Reed is going to have to ball out for that to happen. So I think that it's him.
Good one. My question is, if he has a career year, can they still not win the Super Bowl?
I mean, yeah, he's a safety. Like, listen, I...
Okay, Patrick Mahomes is the answer. If Patrick Mahomes has a career year, they win the Super Bowl. That's the only answer.
That's cheating. I feel like I'm talking to Kent here. That's okay. Cheating.
Travis Kelce.
Okay, now I'm talking to Maddie. Now I know who I'm talking to.
I think that's the one. I mean, the other one I could give, if Chris Jones or Frank Clark have a career year, because both of them have had very good years. Like, both of them, not their careers have been good, but they both have had very, very, very good highs. We're talking like right there, first team all pro, or right there on the doorstep. If they can somehow top that this year, I think that would go a long way into the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl. I actually would almost border on the edge of saying, especially Chris Jones, who was dominant a few years ago, if he tops that season this year, yeah, the Chiefs will win the Super Bowl because of, or in a large part because of that. Frank Clark has a little bit more room to grow up and above his best year, but still, if you get like prime best year Frank Clark all of a sudden this season, that's good. That would be huge. Like, that would be really hard for this team to lose short of the Super Bowl.
Oh man, yeah, for certain. All right. Will Yoder asks, are there any content providers for other NFL teams that you guys follow / recommend for quality and in-depth analysis similar to yours? Well, first of all, Will, thank you. That's very kind. From a general NFL perspective, like we mentioned to Nate Tyson, Deontay Lee, that are both for The Athletic. Now, just not only are they just exceptional football minds, they are so good at translating it down to where I can understand it. And that's awesome that you have people like that. Mark Schofield does quarterback stuff for USA Today. Like, awesome job doing all that. Our guy Zach Hicks over with the Colts does a great job as well. Joe Rolls from the Denver Broncos does a great job as well. Maddie, you have any more? I know I'm leaving out tons of people here. I'm just blanking right now.
I believe Steven Ruiz is writing for the Ringer now. Yeah. I enjoy his stuff. Benjamin Solak also at the Ringer now. Both of them, I read a lot of that stuff coming from them. I think that's kind of the big ones right now in the offseason. Like, ask again during the year when I'm consuming a lot more football stuff, and I might have, you know, I'll have a few more like team specific ones. Like, I'm so checked out on listening to a lot of football stuff right now that it's hard to bring them all in. Like, I'm trying to turn off the football side of my head right now. So I don't have a lot more besides the ones we've mentioned currently.
Yeah. No chicken tonight. As another one here, does moving Brendan Daly around the defense suggest he's the logical successor to Steve Spagnuolo? That is interesting because they've really kind of pushed him pretty hard in pressers this offseason. Said, you know, he wants to learn a lot, kind of the same way that Greg Lewis wanted to learn a lot. I will say this. It definitely seemed like they were super excited to get Joe Cullen. And so that makes me more think that, like, not that Brendan Daly doesn't want to move to linebackers, don't get me wrong, or that they think that he's not going to do a good job of that, like DJ talked about. He's been the run game coordinator. Translating the linebacker is going to be all right. He's going to be fine. But I think that if Joe Cullen wasn't available, we might still see Brendan Daly as the defensive line coach. And so I think that I'm not sure if that is a correlation or not. But that being said, when they hired the staff a few years back, we did say that Brendan Daly probably the guy that's going to take over if Spags moved along or retired or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I'm a little torn on this one. I think you can easily make the case the Chiefs' defensive line has probably underperformed a little bit since Daly's taken over. So I don't know if it's necessarily, it definitely has not been framed as any kind of demotion or we're moving you because we like somebody better. It's been set up as he wants to take on a new challenge. That's going to be the linebacker position this year. And it's not like he has no experience working with that kind of groups. Like, I get the change, especially now when you are essentially overhauling that entire unit, both of those units really coming up. So I get it. I don't know if this says anything about him being a Steve Spagnuolo replacement, though. I think if they thought of that, if they were going to make him like that was his goal of being the replacement, they probably would have found a way to add another just title to him and not move him positions. And is he still the run game coordinator?
Yes, he is still the run game coordinator. They kept all of that with him. He kept his title. That means something. It does.
It does.
But, you know, we'll see. We'll see here a little bit. I will say, I won't lay the entire defensive line underperformance at his feet there. I mean, the guy that they spent the most money on has been hurt or, you know, has had health problems for most of the time that he's been here. And then their other superstar played defensive end for part of one of the seasons. So there's been some motion around. So, I mean, like, I could see the linebackers coming out and playing really well and then them just being like, yep, Brendan Daly's the future. And we knew it. And that's exactly what we were trying to do here. So I can see it definitely spun that way. Julian K asks, what is your most controversial music take? He suggests his is that the Talking Heads are overrated and borderline unlistenable. First of all, false, Julian K. I mean, that is very controversial. I will fight you on that one. Do you got one, Maddie, off the top of your head?
You said Talking Heads, and I thought we were talking about like people on ESPN or NFL Network for a second. It took me a minute to remember we're talking about music.
I have no idea who the Talking Heads are. Music podcast where I play music for Maddie, and he doesn't know any of it.
My controversial take is Drake is trash. You guys just like him because the beat sounds good and he says nothing of value or depth or anything that makes any sense. It just sounds good if you aren't actually listening to just have on in the background. So he somehow confused billions of people that he makes good music. He's made the exact same album since his second one and you all just eat it up year after year when all he does is change like two words of a song. And now guess what? You guys all just went and listened. You're going to tell me, oh no, I'm wrong. This song's different. But yeah, you still had to go listen to know the words were different because every single one sounds the same. Drake is awful.
All right, here's my most controversial music take. The Foo Fighters are a way better band than Nirvana was. Dave Grohl's leading the group is a better musical band. I like the music significantly better. I understand the cultural impact of Nirvana and all of that. I'm not trying to deny that, but they are a better band than Nirvana. Whew, that's going to, all the 90s kids are going to come after me for that one. All right, no chicken tonight. We're going to close this out with, what training camp position group battle are you looking forward to the most? Maddie, training camp schedule came out. Where KCSN is talking internally about maybe when we're meeting up, we'll let you know when that's coming, when maybe all of us are going to be around. But what you're most excited to see?
So the thing with training camp battles is you got to pick ones that matter, right? Like, I don't know if you can see cornerback battles. You can't see linebacker battles at all, or running back at all. Like, a lot of positions you can't, safeties. But, you know, you're kind of looking at the trenches. And so, like, I'll leave the defensive side for Craig. I'll just say right tackle, I guess. It's not even that I'm the most excited, because I think it's kind of like a drop in the bucket at this point in time. But I'm at least interested to see who's going to come away from that with, you know, the lead. Like, it was pretty obvious last year that Creed Humphrey, who was already named a starter, and then Trey Smith were the best center and right guard that they had available. You can kind of start to see stuff from certain positions, like that right tackle battle with Lucas Niang, Darian Kennard, Andrew Wiley. I do think training camp is an area where we can get a little bit of answers there, just who looks better and who's getting the reps. Like, that's, I guess, the most intriguing one to me.
I mean, I took it as like battle, like offense versus defense. So I'm going to play that. I'm going to play it that way. But okay, you're right. Like, he probably meant it that way, but I took it this way. I think that George Karloftis versus Darian Kennard is going to end in fights, multiple, with an S, because I think George Karloftis is going to keep coming, and he's going to grow in, you know, more and more aggressive with the way that he is attacking the right tackle position. If that is Darian Kennard over there, he seems like a man who does not suffer for that sort of stuff, and we'll try and put him in the dirt several times. I think the two of them are going to scrap, not like in a bad way, in a training camp way, where there are constantly guys like that that are going to sit and yap at each other and get in each other's grills and stuff like that. It just happens. I think that that's going to happen between those two rookies, and I am so excited to see it, because I think that's going to fit both of their personality really well.
Now, I know you said we're getting out of here on that question, but we're not. I got one. And I think I'm going to be on the next few 21 questions, so I want to submit it in person while I'm here.
Okay.
I need you to tell me who you, myself, Kent, and Tucker are if we were the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, man. Okay.
Now, if Kent was here, he would accuse me of already coming up with my list, and I have not. I purposely have not thought about this, so I can also provide my answers. I thought of the question. Man. And then I decided to not even give it any thought until I got it.
Okay. Like, I got it immediately. So that's, I feel perfect. That confident about it.
Because BJ Splinter, like, we know that.
BJ Splinter. I mean, I.
And you got to pick Turtles, like, no Casey Jones. Cause like, I would fight you to be.
Yeah,
Casey.
I'm not going to go there. Tucker's Michelangelo. Dude's out here to have fun. Having a great time. Tucker is Michelangelo.
Yep.
Absolutely Michelangelo.
That's the only thing. That's the only hard yes. Like, anything else, yeah, we can probably go anywhere else, but Tucker has to be Michelangelo.
He's Michelangelo. Hard yes. I think that Kent is Leonardo. Kent is typically the host of the pod. He's the one that typically speaks out, and he gets, you know, he's Hollywood. He gets all the TV opportunities and stuff like that. He's the quote-unquote face of some of that, like, you know, Leonardo gets all the lines and stuff like that. So I'll say that Kent is Leonardo, which means that you and I have to fight between Donatello and Raphael. I mean, Donatello, I hate to even play into this stereotype, but Donatello is like the one that, like,
he's the smart one. He's the one that knows everything.
That's not what I was gonna say.
That has been in space.
He engineers things. He does all the... So I gotta take Donatello. And honestly, Raph kind of fits you.
So yeah, the not as intelligent one that just likes to, you know, like, do the physically active things.
I mean, the physically active part is what I was leaning on, but definitely not the not as intelligent thing. That's not, you're putting words in my mouth.
This, as you started talking, this is actually pretty easy. Like, it does align pretty well. Like, it aligns for the only thing it's missing is like Leonardo needs like a much better like hairpiece and product for it. But like, if that was the case, like it would be a perfect, like, yeah, this is probably the easiest one of these I've done. I'll come
and Leonardo needs like worse food taste than like the rest of
it's
the
kinda
turtles.
It's kind of hard to have bad food taste when all you eat is cheese pizza, though.
I know.
Although I guess cheese pizza in itself is a pretty questionable food take. So.
That's true. There you go. It fits. It fits in right there. Matt, is that what you're going to go with?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think this was actually, I do think this one's, that one was pretty easy. I'll come better next time with another. That one wasn't as fun as some of the others that I've done. Like that one was pretty straightforward, I think.
I like that one though.
We also need to get Tucker to do a TikTok using nunchucks.
Now, I will buy you nunchucks, Tucker. That is going to do it for 21 questions for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Give this a like, give it a share, subscribe to the channel, 5 stars on Apple Podcast or Spotify. Go give us those ratings. All of that stuff helps us. All that stuff increases visibility so that we can bring more of these to you. That being said, we will be back next week with the lab and more 21 questions. We will catch you later.